The Money Show.
It's unusual.
With Colin Cullis.
Business Unusual, brought to you by Nedbank Business Banking in the trenches of business. It's easy to lose sight of what matters, so partner with the bank that sees the bigger picture. Nedbank Business Banking. I must admit to be Colin Cullister having a little bit of FOMO this evening, a little bit of book launch envy. I see our former colleague David O'Sullivan is on stage at Hyde Park in Johannesburg with the Midday Report presenter Mandy Wiener with her fabulous book, The Whistleblowers. As we went into lockdown, I was going to have a book launch at Hyde Park too. And Cyril Ramaphosa prevented it from happening. He said no, because he was scared of the things I'd written about him. No, it wasn't. Anyway, I'm delighted for Mandy Wiener. The book is getting fantastic reviews and very good on that. But let's move on to regenerative agriculture, because we as human beings, I think we've been planting stuff in the ground and harvesting for 10,000 years at some point. The earth push back and say, hold on a second, I've given you enough and you can't keep putting chemicals into me to keep me productive.
Yes, and as a confirmed city slicker, I must admit, once again, I am way out of my depth. I would have much preferred to be discussing the Google monopoly cases, because that's something I understood a little better. But the vote today by the European Union to continue with the subsidies for European farmers without any extra requirements for reducing their ecological footprints or doing something to mitigate climate change suggests that this is a subject that we absolutely do need to start paying some attention to. Greta Thunberg has basically said it's like the EU have given up. And they were supposedly the guys who were getting this, who were looking for more sustainable methods of farming, not doing the massive, large-scale, big agriculture type stuff. And I came across this in part just because Australia, South Africa, we're experiencing the brunt of climate change. The water isn't necessarily drying up completely, but it's changing. And so when farmers can rely on, when to plant and when to harvest is getting more and more difficult. And the real shift that seemed to come about, and certainly this was a case of an Australian farmer who back in the 80s had a very bad drought, which got him to say he cannot continue operating the way he is. And so he basically went back to university and redid all of his learnings about agriculture, and is now only slowly starting to see that some of the oldest practices we used to have are maybe the ones that are going to be a lot more sustainable for us. And so this has grown into a movement that has things like permaculture and sustainability and ecologically driven farming practice that have sort of been rolled up together to talk about this regenerative agriculture. And the notion is farming typically was sort of an extractive thing. We'd add chemicals and plants and fertilizers and pesticides, then take the produce and send it off to the cities, and then hope that the next year we can do it all again. And for the longest time, that has actually worked. We have been remarkably successful at increasing yields year in, year out by getting better plant crops, better chemicals, better fertilizers, etc. And I've certainly picked up on some of the things around the amazing machinery and, you know, our reliance on phosphorus for allowing the fertilizer to happen and the creation of all of that. But you miss out on that key thing, which is that farming, unlike business where things can change rapidly, typically don't, except in the last two decades where climate change really has forced farming, which is, you know, not been a fast-moving thing, to deal with its own form of disruption that hasn't come in the form of technology. It's come from something much larger than all of us, the climate, even though arguably our technology was responsible for all of this. And so the first departure point, I suppose, is that for farmers, it's rethinking what they have always been doing and then accepting potentially that stuff that sounds very counterintuitive might be the better way to go. And it's not to say that this is all confirmed science or that this works everywhere equally well, but the principles that they describe when applied to different regions certainly have had some very encouraging results. And one of the first ones, and I certainly, if somebody had to ask me, name some of the most important inventions humans have come up with, I would have rated the plow as being one of them. Because that principally, 12,000 years ago, when we started saying we're going to stay in one place and start working the land, allowed us to sort of get access to the ground and start planting things that otherwise would have been very difficult for us. But we've become so reliant on plows or certain kinds of plows that we've lost focus for what we really should be looking after. And that's the soil itself. And this is where this form of farming has made the shift away from looking at your inputs to looking at the actual regenerative nature of soil. And to be fair to farmers, which in most countries, and certainly I'd imagine in South Africa, there is a portion that are very large and commercially controlled that would have departments that could look after things like the accounting and the economics and do the futures buying. But the very many more of them are family-run farms. And you don't have an accounts department. You don't have economists in the family. You've got somebody who, because they were a spouse or a child, has been co-opted to come and, you know, do what they need to do to look after the farm.
Sorry. Memories, Colin Cullis. Memories.
Indeed, Bruce, I forget that you are a lot closer to this.
Exactly.
Share some stories yourself.
You're talking my history.
Well, in this case, perhaps, it almost requires someone who's got away to see what you've seen now for how the economy works to understand that actually it should never have been an extractive process. And so the first steps for people wanting to try and get this back again was to say, if we are effectively not farming the land, but just managing debt, because the costs for your seeds, the costs for your fertilizers and pesticides and fuel for having to go and plow up huge tracts of land and then potentially go and redo that and pay for the irrigation and the pumps and the electricity that you need for all of this stuff, effectively set you up to basically be teetering on the edge of bankruptcy every single season, hoping that there isn't a drought or a pest or some other thing, or possibly a very good season somewhere else, that the prices simply can't get you your money back.
I thought you said you were a city slicker who knew nothing about this. You understand it perfectly. It's red or black at the casino, and you do it every year for 50 years if you make it that long.
Jeez. Yeah, and the challenge for the farmers, and I didn't realize, I mean, I get that it was very stressful, but in looking at some of the reports about just how stressful this is, about just how often farmers are spending more times in bank branches than they are in their own fields, and the stress levels that causes, and then the impact when a farm becomes non-productive, it's not just, oh, well, there's a couple of hectares that aren't going to be producing something. There are whole ecosystems and, you know, economies in towns and the families and the extended people who are all dependent on it that go with it. And so it's on that basis that it really is worthwhile for people to have a look. Now, I'm mindful that the technical parts of all of this stuff is probably best left for, you know, people who work the farms. But there was a couple of them that when I was listening to it, they made sort of instinctual sense to me. So if somebody had to say, stop plowing the fields, I'd say, why would you do that? You want to be able to get access to this. And the reason is all the good stuff is in the ground. More specifically, we need to get carbon out of the air into the ground. And that carbon in the ground that is so vital, which you kind of overlook, are the microbes. And when you turn soil over, you're effectively exposing them to the sun. And as you know about sun and microbes, bacteria, and at the moment, possibly with viruses, et cetera, we're all in favor of it, but it kills them. And so effectively, you're killing your soil. The other thing with plowing is that despite the plow lifting the top part of the soil, it effectively has to leverage the bit that's picking up by pushing down on the bit underneath it and compacts the soil. And the problem with the compacting of soil, certainly beyond a certain depth, is that it removes all of the ability for air to get in. No oxygen, no carbon dioxide. And with no air or oxygen, the microbes can't live. And so no roots are going to go grow down there because there's nothing happening. Effectively, you take what would have been nice, deep, arable land and you make it much shallower and less productive. The second element is that when you grow a variety of crops, and you don't sort of plow them right out. And typically, let's say you grow wheat. They don't have very deep root systems. You then harvest the wheat and you sell that off to get the return on the wheat itself. But then you pull up all of the straw and you sell that off for animal feed. So effectively, you've just taken things out the ground. You put nothing back. And for a good period of months, it's sitting, baking in the hot sun. If the wind is blowing across it, it's going to be blowing that sand away. If it does rain, the rain is going to pull, run off very quickly and possibly erode it. So by leaving things growing on it, you're effectively adding in your fertilizer nice and slowly. And depending on what you put in there, you're both adding in a bit of depth and a bit of structure to the soil. You're allowing those microbes to grow and add more of the carbon into it. And they effectively do the attachment. So they fix your nitrogen. They allow you to extract the phosphorus and sodium and all those other good things that you need. And at the same time, you're also sort of, by creating this mat of growing material, you're limiting the kinds of plants that you wouldn't want, the weeds you don't want, because effectively a weed can only grow where there is space for it to grow. And so by covering everything and making it nice and full, it effectively does it. So the plow gets replaced with the mower and the roller. And then you choose your crops according to which is going to suit you best. And once you've grown those crops, The point is then to bring in grazing animals. It's not that the cows and the herd animals are all bad and we need to get rid of them all. We just need to make sure we don't put more on the land that the land can feed. The problem comes when we intensify it. When you have to pay to have food brought into a farm to feed animals, you're effectively overburdening the sort of system. When you let them go and walk, and the deal is they trample a bit of the grass, which gets it back into the ground, they eat some of the grass, ruminate it, and poo it all out, effectively adding back what you need. But some of it they leave, especially if you don't leave them on a field for too long. And that gets you even better growth coming back. And then you get, at the same time, because you have got living things now on the ground, you get all the little bugs and the biodiversity coming back. There was a farmer who was talking about he had a row of trees planted to prevent the wind just sort of pulling off all the too much moisture off of the land. And what he noted was that he didn't have to spend too much on managing aphids, because effectively the ladybirds would all hang out in the little forest. And then every morning or whenever they would go out for their foraging, they would go and attack all the aphids that would have come and otherwise attacked his plants that he would have to go and spray. So there's a very virtuous cycle that we created. If farmers are willing to start looking at, you know, the sort of full ecosystem and what needs to get put into the ground to get something back out of it. And I suppose for us in the cities, and certainly for governments and banks and big institutions, and this is not to say that big agriculture, you know, there's no need for fertilizers or great farm crops or even the tractors that we use, but to start using them in a much more specialized way to work more in harmony with what the world will provide on its own, rather than us simply trying to extract it. And I don't think we're going to have time for me to mention the story, but there is a fascinating story in Saudi Arabia that in the space of 6 years, a desert that was basically eaten blank, and then to feed the animals that they were trying to sustain, they chopped down the wood to sell the firewood to buy food for the animals. So effectively got rid of all the trees. And in the space of about 6 years, they were able to restore it all by carefully capturing water, carefully replanting certain species and letting it all come back, and is these days flourishing. So it's very good signs that without needing the usual typical interventions of artificial intelligence or big technology, people who know the land, who work the land, can simply go back to the basics and potentially get us out of a very big mess with regards to climate change.
Thank you, Colin Cullis with Business Unusual.